Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Russ Brooks, and a mildly poorly Jim Harley. I mean, the commitment to the cause is admirable. He's got some sort of man flu. We don't really know how much longer he's got left, to be honest. I'm not sure if the symptoms... Have the symptoms started presenting as Ebola yet, Jim, or are we still okay?
No, it's just COVID man flu cold.
Okay.
Yeah, so I will be muting myself to try and avoid sneezing over the mic. And when I regularly need to blow my nose or cough, then I'll try and do the same.
To be fair, and I mean this with all sincerity, the fact that Jim has come on board to record when he's clearly not feeling very well is very much appreciated.
Well, it saves everyone listening to bloody me again.
Well, I mean,
like last
there is
week,
that.
Because the only person you could dig up to do it was me. Poor sods listening.
Oh dear. Well, as we did sort of fear somewhat, Gloucester were handily beaten by a very strong Saracen side at the weekend. But Russ, we had that conversation around team selection and what we were going to be doing for the next couple of weeks. But that's kind of part of the pod this week. We'll be talking about this really weird sort of holding pattern where not a lot is going to happen really from a season point of view until the Benetton semi-final. That's going to be the probably defining moment so far of the season. We will talk about the game. I'll let Jim how he watched the game via the PRTV feed, and we'll give Jim his opportunity to review it as well. And also, we will just chat more generally about what's going on in rugby. So a couple of other things to talk about, including, the women's rugby, as expected, still one as one-sided as ever. And also a few other bits and pieces that we will come to later on. Right. Starting off, though, with the Saracens game at the weekend, probably the place to start, though, is the squad that was picked. Much changed on previous weeks with all the knockout rugby we've had. And Russ, you and I kind of had a chat about this last week, and we said we understood the logic for it, but it's a difficult thing because it's, you know, that it plays into this issue around league competitiveness and all the rest of it. Jim, before we get onto the game, your thoughts on the squad?
I'm just thinking, like, I know what Lawrence would say, and it's like, oh, there's a lot of asterisks.
Yes.
it's a very young squad. And, you know, in hindsight, it's quite easy to say, actually, no, you know, they've give them a chance. And give them some game time and all that sort of thing. I think in the lead up to the game, if you'd, you know, after maybe not going a couple of years ago when we won there and things like that, you go, oh, right, I've booked a hotel and I've booked an expensive train or, you know, organised transport and I'm going to buy my match ticket and you've invested a lot of money and then you see that Gloucester squad and you see that Saracen squad, you're like, oh, God, you know, I mean, yes, it's a two-horse race and either horse could win. But in reality, in rugby, very, very rarely does a huge underdog win. It's not like football where it's a relatively low-scoring game. So I think I would have loved to have been part of kind of some of those discussions that George must have had with that young squad, that Lewis Ludlow must have had to try and enthuse that young squad. I've heard a few of like Lewis's pre-match kind of in the huddle in the dressing room kind of chats. And I think he's quite a good motivator, obviously. But you'd have had to do a lot of work to get the team mentally thinking they had a chance. And I think that's half the problem with rugby. It is such a mental game as well as the physical. Yeah. And to mentally get a group, that group of players to actually believe that they could pull off a win, I would suggest is somewhere in the impossible.
Yeah. Well, I think, was it 18? I think Saracens had 18 full internationals. We had 15 academy players.
Yeah. Academy, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, there was internationals within our side, and there were some, you know, key players that we had in the team, and some very good talented young players, but it doesn't give you a huge chance when you're not playing your best 15.
No.
Really?
No. And it's probably going to happen again.
We'll come on to the extra game in a bit. But I mean, just on that thing, though, because we talked about the dilemma as from a coaching point of view, that we could have put a full team out and we could have got hammered anyway, because it's Saracens and they are an incredibly good side and they've got world-class talent everywhere. So probably when we're saying, looking in hindsight, Russ, that the fact we came out with a bonus point, a try bonus point, and there were some good encouraging performances by a few players, that's good, I suppose.
It is, but I'm really torn on how I feel about it, because I know hindsight's always an exact science, isn't it? And I was genuinely worried that we could have had 70 put on us when I saw those sides. That was a genuine worry of mine. And fair play to the boys, that didn't happen. I haven't seen the game, I've just seen the tries. So there's always that element of how much is that Sarri's letting up? Probably a bit. How much is that us staying in the game? A reasonable amount as well, and there were some nice performances in there, but that game could have so easily gone the other way, and it didn't, and I'm really glad of that. But the risk is, what did the guys get if it had gone the other way? And I think there's always a danger with just devaluing what we're thinking of the league, you know, and how we go taking it forward. And next week, which we'll come on to, will be interesting what they do there. Because if I'm a season ticket holder, I wouldn't be very amused. And if I'm not a season ticket holder, why should I buy a ticket?
Yeah.
We have basically put all our eggs in the European basket, which is a risk. It's not a give me, as we talked about before. Is there anything to be had in the league? Probably not, but I'd still like us to, as I said last week, I still think we should be trying to give the league, as we should be competitive. We should be setting up for where we're going to be at next season, because this is, the league is the meat and drink. If we win Europe this year, that's amazing. I'll be really happy. I don't want to just be a cup side next year, though. Like we said, Ed, we need to be looking into, I think we're being realistic, looking into breaking into the top six next year, because there are some very good sides around. It's a big ask to do it. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I think there were some good performances. Some people will hopefully develop and learn from it. But you can't do that every week, I don't think.
Yeah. Jim, just, if you want to just touch on the performances in the actual game itself, because you watched all of it on the PRTV. I didn't. And, you know, fully admit, I wasn't going to pay $5.99 to watch a Gloucester Academy Plus side going down a Saracens with a full, who've gone full guns. I didn't really see the much benefit for my mental health on that one. So if you would like to kick off.
Yeah, well, to be honest, it wasn't me that paid for it. It was the wife. She's suddenly developed this fantastic appreciation for all things rugby. Mm-hmm. Like rekindled some passion from a few years ago, I think, when she used to have a season ticket. So we have watched an awful lot of rugby, you know, European weekends on the telly the last couple of weekends. And she was really keen. So, like, she did it on her account and sent it to the telly. I was a little bit miffed because I was quite happy watching the England-Ireland Women's Six Nations. But, like, you know, as we kind of expected, Saracens often do come out incredibly hard and they go for that sort of blitz 20 minutes. And they looked really sharp. I mean, their winger scored three tries.
The quickest hat-trick ever, isn't it? I think it was.
Yeah.
Well, quickest hat-trick, because it was in the Bristol game. It was the quickest bonus point, wasn't it?
Yes.
So obviously there's lots of tries being scored. But yeah, it was, our defence looked really poor. I mean, it was Josh Hathaway's wing that all these tries seemed to be coming in on. There was seemed to be just like they just didn't have that understanding of each other, our back line in attack or defense. There were players getting in the way of passes. There were players trying to take passes that clearly were destined to go across their chests. And, you know, there were knock-ons. There were all sorts of issues and huge gaps, or just we weren't spread out enough. So there was a big gap on the edge for someone that's fast to just, take the edge and go. And yeah, we conceded a lot of points relatively quickly, and Saracens absolutely did what Saracens don't normally do, and they took their foot off the gas.
Mm.
They let us back into the game. I mean, not with a chance of obviously getting a victory, but they did what we've done to Saracens lots, you know, or other teams have done to Saracens lots. And when they're beating Saracens, they then let Saracens score two tries in the last 5 minutes and get a bonus point or get two bonus points. And I thought that was really positive from Gloucester. Like Russ said, like that never say die attitude.
Hmm.
We did keep going for the full 80. And obviously it's a testament to that, that we got that bonus point, which probably won't make any odds, but it's nice to get something from a game.
Yeah.
And I think it really made me, I mean, especially after watching the Northampton Leicester game the following day, I think Saracens are a very good side, and they've got a lot of very good players, and they've also got the Vunipola brothers, and others that are very much past their best. And I think they'll be in the top four, but I can't see them winning a semi-final, and definitely not a final against the top teams, unless something changes significantly with that Saracens team, because they're good, but I don't think they're that good at the moment. And they're probably going to have a season or two of rebuilding, because they've got some good youngsters. But yeah, I think we're looking at maybe Bristol being back on the boom. We're definitely looking at a year for Northampton. And for Gloucester, if we're happy just sneaking bonus point wins away at teams that aren't the very best in the league, then that's not really good enough.
Sorry, Russ, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, it's all relative, isn't it? People are really, really positive and thinking it's great to play the young guys. I've been lucky to start watching more rugby this year. Now Ken's is a bit older. He kind of will happily sit and is mildly interested. And just watching, I'm like, God, I said this last week. I wish we played like Northampton. And I don't think it would be that hard to adopt a game plan like that. We've got personnel that can do it. And it's like, where would I rather be? And I think in all honesty, winning silverware is very, very nice. I'd rather be in a position where we're competitive in the league, because it is where you really measure yourself and set the bar, isn't it? Let's be honest, the Premiership Cup was really nice to win. We did really well. Lovely to win a cup trophy at Kingzone in our 150th year. I think that was a really nice thing. It's not a major trophy. And the Champions, the Challenge Cup is not a major trophy, is it? So
I think the Challenge Cup's fair enough. I think you can only be in three competitions a year, yeah. And if you win two of them, regardless of the, I take your point entirely about Premiership Cup, and we won't go too much detail this, because we'll wait till we know what the situation is at the end of the season, but. Premiership Cup, you're quite right. It is not a senior trophy. You're playing academy squads across the competition until you get towards the end of it. And then again, you know, the nature of the selection policy you're allowed and all the rest of it means you have to pick the players that weren't at the World Cup. Obviously, Leicester managed to get Andre Pollard because South Africa. But I think the Challenge Cup's fair enough. I think if you look at the sides in that competition, I think if you can win that, that's a pretty notable achievement, particularly if you're adding in South African sides and the caliber of the French sides now.
Yeah, I think when we've won it previously, we're quite aware that it's not the Champions Cup, but at the same time, we've been really bloody pleased about it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I'm probably being a bit too harsh. I think what I do find frustrating is to then not to basically write off
a big chunk
of the season. By all means have a go at the Challenge Cup. But what I think is important is, I made this point, Hastings is our best fly half when he's fit and he's in form. He needs game time, though. You could see that in the game against the Ospreys. He just wasn't quite there. There are players who are going to benefit from that game time and be playing. And I think you've got to strike a balance between giving the young lads some opportunity, but giving them an opportunity to blend in well, because that game could have gone horribly wrong. And I'm really thankful it didn't. And that is a credit to the players. But your best bet at developing them is to put some good players around them as well. And we did do that to a degree with playing people like Ludlow and having your club captain out there to look after them. Like you said, Jim, he is very good at keeping the players focused and, you know,
and playing for the 80.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. he'll be hitting rucks. He'll be making tackles, giving absolutely everything right up at the very, you know, until the very end of the game. And I think, you know, leading by example like that is very, very important, because, like you said, you know, it could have gone horribly wrong. It could have been an absolute disaster for those young players. You know, was it two Premiership first starts first appearances? You know, you can imagine what that would do for your confidence if you're involved in a game and you end up with a scoreline like the Bristol Newcastle game. You know, it could take you a full 12 months to actually play another decent game of rugby unless you get put down the divisions and start playing, first division stuff.
And I think that for me, that's the way. There's a balance, isn't there, bringing in young players normally. I'd rather our way of doing it is to bring them in on a few games, a bit like what Saracens do quite often, you know, bring them in, bring them off the bench. I'd rather be in a position where we're doing that rather than, wow, the season's written off, let's just like chuck them all out. That said, it has had paid dividends. Seb Blake looked like he had a nice little cameo. I mean,
he's got some skills,
hasn't he? Look, that grubber kick was superb. He's offloading. Yeah. You know, he is someone who has taken full advantage of the situation that's being presented to him, and that is what we want. But I just think we haven't all. I'm not sure I like the way we've gone about it. Basically,
yeah. The biggest thing for me with So you've got people like Josh Hathaway who has got a hat trick, you know, scored a great finish, although Jim did try to nick it off him via Twitter, helpfully corrected by the Gloucester Twitter themselves. But you know, he didn't have to do a huge amount, but he had to finish them. He had to show a bit of gas and good ball skills. But there is a concern with his defence. I mean, it's not just this game. There's been a couple of games now where he's been on the wing and we've conceded tries off on his wing.
That's quite a common thing for a young winger that in the past hasn't probably worried about it too much because their attack is so strong.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's
when you're a schoolboy and you just run rings around everyone, you don't really worry too much about your defence, I should imagine. And now you stepped up.
It's a different level, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest, it's a different level. The size of the guys who are running at you, the skill set of the guys who are running at you, it's a huge step up.
Johnny May wasn't particularly good when he first started. Louis Zammit wasn't either, you know. So
Sinbad wasn't, and he then became one of our best wingers defensively. Mm. You know, he's got
so, the... He'll get there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think the key thing is probably his positioning isn't quite there yet, but that's communication with the players around him, and that's forcing him to probably make tackles at the wrong time or in the wrong place, and that's where he's being exposed a bit. But as I said, the great thing is he is scoring tries, and you've got to. I think we sometimes focus too much on the negatives. We focus too much on what the players can't do and what instead of what they can do. You know, if we can work on the defense, which I'm sure that, that they will be, you know, that that'll be a key area for him going forward. If he can get that improved, why wouldn't he be? He's going to be a huge asset going
leaks,
forward.
If he leaks a couple and scores a dozen, it doesn't matter, does it?
No, no, exactly. Just on the final thing on the Sarri's game, moreover. So our good friend pet journalistic troll, Stephen Jones, off of the Times. Yes, that is the senior rugby writer for the paper of record, by the way, guys, and permanent troll, did highlight that, you know, it was a bit of an embarrassment for Gloucester that, you know, we put, in his words, a sort of second string side out and all the rest of it. Oh, I mean, look, we were saying it in the week. We said it on the podcast. We thought that it was a bit of a mistake. It definitely handed Saracens a big advantage. Is it simply because it's Stephen Jones saying it that that's created the reaction that it did? So obviously Lewis Ludlow, quite rightly, I think, you know, standing up for his teammates, has come out swinging and having a pop at Stephen Jones. Stephen Jones is using his journalistic credentials as cover. I mean, personally, I think you've got a piece of the Times, mate. It's not like you're being cancelled about this. You've got a piece of the Times. You can quite legitimately raise your issues.
I mean, he was backpedaling with some of his later tweets, wasn't he? Did he have a point? Probably. Could he have articulated it better? Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think that was the point. It was so disrespectful. The one that really annoyed me was someone had the same surname as Hathaway and just said, oh, my namesake was playing, just half joking. He was like, oh, he had a walk-in hat trick. It was a give-me hat trick. Mm. There is no such thing as a give-me hat trick. He worked hard. Now, one was an intercept. He had to read that still. He still has to read that. His second try was a great finish off that grubber kick and is a good read and reaction. His first try was a bloody good finish. There was nothing give me about that.
Well, you say a good finish. I'm not
convinced. There's photographic evidence of the touchdown.
The point is, you know, there's a point where you're like, you're just talking bollocks, you know, and if one of us said that, we'd call each other out on it. In the same way you called me out, Ed, for probably being a bit too harsh on my views on the European competition. And he is no different. He should be called out for that. He's always been very much an apologist for Saracens.
Like, look, the hypocritical nature of it is what I think really wound people up. Yeah, so he's saying it's damning for the side, blah, 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 blah. Well, all right, where was the thing? I have checked. No similar criticism when Saracens put a shitty team out when we put 50-odd points on them a couple of years ago, because quite legitimately, Saracens went, well, we're going to rest our players because we're in the playoffs already. Now, if results had been slightly different that day, Gloucester could have ended up in the playoffs. It was only because I think Northampton were playing Newcastle, so it was a bit of a walkover for them as well. No concerns on that, because it's Saracens, and he seems to have this very odd blind spot.
I mean, let's be honest. There's a bit of an agenda here, and I think if it was any, I can kind of agree with it, that it's one of the ones where if you're against relegation, you can use this as an argument as to why, and I could see it, because we've written off our season. There's no consequence to us for where we finish, so why would you not rest the players? Mm. And that can go either way, that argument, can't you? You can go, on the one hand, it gives young lads a good chance. On the other, it's disrespectful to those teams still competing. But, and here's the but, what happens if there was relegation and Newcastle and us were both, there was no points in it, Gloucester go up against a side fighting to get into the playoffs, so that side give it full beans and go in and have to win. Newcastle are playing a team at the top of the league. There's no stake in the game for them. So they put a bunch of youngsters out and a side could go down because of top. It works always, doesn't it?
I mean,
it?
In this particular case, we can't finish lower than ninth. Yeah. Yay, ninth. So it's the argument of relegation. I take that point, the argument of relegation and what it could, the lack of relegation, and this could cause problems going forward. Well, Gloucester aren't going to finish any lower than ninth. We're not realistically going to finish any higher than ninth. it doesn't make a difference to a, so it you know.
I think that might be part of his agenda as well.
If you wanted to rest players because there was a more important fixture next week, like, you know, if we were in a relegation dogfight with Newcastle, I think it would be pretty nonsensical to go, what's the likelihood of us getting a load of points out of Saracens compared to getting a load of points out of Exeter? Let's rest the team to get smashed at Saracens and then absolutely fully load it, focus on getting 4 or 5 points in that Exeter game and saving ourselves from relegation. It's a risky thing, but I think if you try and win both games, you end up losing both, don't you? If you've got a squad that can't really compete on multi-level. So, yeah, and that's part of being a blooming director of rugby. You know, you make those tough decisions. You take a bit of a risk at times.
And it's the whole point of a league structure, Jim, isn't it? It's like sometimes you'll play a side who are just shit that week. You know, that's why the saying is the league table doesn't lie. Sometimes you'll come up against a team who are top and they have a really good week. Other weeks they'll have a bad week. Other weeks, like you said, they will rest players for whatever reason. We've done it before. We've played teams in the season where they haven't put a full strength side out for various reasons. It happens.
Yeah. I mean, with Gloucester often were one of the main beneficiaries from the old system when we played during the Six Nations and Autumn Internationals, because we had relatively few players, I should say, away with international duty, and we would play Saracens or we would play Leicester or we would play somebody, Quins, during these weeks, gave us an advantage, and then, you know, we had a chance of winning these games. It's just one of those things. I mean, I think that we'll pause on the Gloucester thing now, because I want to just move on to a story that came out this week around the Championship, talking about promotion and relegation. So obviously we know that there isn't going to be any promotion this season, but there is an expansion of the Championship about to occur. And it looks like it's going to be expanded, I think, to 14 or even 16 teams in about 2-3 years' time. And obviously what they're trying to do is they're trying to create a pool of teams that will slowly build with the eventual opportunity to try and get into the Premiership. I don't envisage a return to 12-team Premiership anytime soon, though. Jim, on that, you know, obviously this is the first season we've had it. We've had all the Autumn Internationals and the Six Nations being played, and no Premiership fixtures happening during that time. I think it's been good from the overall product. I mean, I think someone was saying on Twitter about how poor the Gloucester Leicester game was, etc., in the league. But overall, the product is better because you have better players playing more regularly.
I think, yeah. The value of a season ticket, if you like, the cup competition becomes an Academy Cup competition, properly, until the late knockout stages. I think you look at the Championship and there isn't a team that would do remotely well as it stands. So the thought of having two extra teams, I mean, where those players and that money is going to come from, nobody knows. It makes sense, I suppose, if there's enough teams of Championship level to be worthy to be in the Championship, then make the Championship a little bit bigger. Obviously, they don't have an international window that they have to worry about.
No.
So they can afford to play a few more games. They don't have their European competition. There's more weekends. So, yeah, if they went to 14 or even 16, you know, that's only 30 weeks of rugby. So I think there's plenty of opportunity potentially to do that. And you would hope that if they're playing a few more games, then that means a little bit more revenue for those clubs. I still think it's disgusting that there isn't a decent TV deal for the Championship.
Agreed.
That's absolutely ridiculous, because it's quality rugby. You look at you know, from a fairness point of view, you've got, well, women's premiership is well televised and women's Six Nations is well televised. I mean, I've been watching bloody on Bucks TV on YouTube. I've been watching like Hartbury College playing in their finals and stuff like that. So there's, it's not that hugely expensive to kind of broadcast some rugby. So you would think there's got to be, it's got to be worthwhile for some sponsor to take it on. And even if it's just on YouTube and they're getting 1,000 people watch it.
Well, it's 1,000 more than healing.
I mean, it's
yeah,
it's,
yeah. There's got to be value in that, surely. Yeah, and it's going to build the game. It's going to get people going, oh, do you know what? Maybe, you know, we've got the dual season ticket with Gloucester and Gloucester Hartbury. So I've got one and I will go to Hartbury and I'll watch the girls play. Obviously, they're now playing at King's Home a lot more as well, especially as we come into the end of the season. And I think, you know, if it was done, if it was organised, and maybe if I had a bit more free time as well. I mean, there's plenty of retired folk out there that don't have as much on their plate as I do. You know, they would, oh yeah, let's have a Hartbury season ticket as well, and I'll support Hartbury. I mean, goodness me, it is like from King's Home to Hartbury University Stadium. I think it's probably about 8 minutes by car. You know, it is ridiculously
close. I think it's about 6 miles, something like that. And so,
it makes sense to try and get to get more people watching Championship rugby, be that live in person, which is obviously, you know, the best because it's the best way to watch sport, isn't it? Of course, money over the bar, you know, money for season tickets, all that sort of thing. But if it is just people watching on YouTube or on BBC, you know, make it accessible, then it's furthering the spread of the game.
Yeah.
It's easier to watch Super Rugby than it is to watch Championship Rugby, because there's Super Rugby on Sky, is it? And, you know, like you said, Jim, your average, but someone like yourself or probably me can go and will think, I'm going to look on YouTube or find that free stream. But you think next year, all the Premiership games are on telly, and that says something that must have been a cost-effective deal for a broadcaster. So how much money would you need to pay for a Championship rugby?
Well, I wonder, because obviously they've got all the TMO infrastructure, haven't they, for games that aren't being televised. And obviously they're on PRTV, but I think historically, you know, before PRTV, you could buy the DVD of the game. You know, Ed's dad used to buy them all the time, didn't he? Before they stopped it, because you had to be a bona fide journalist or whatever to get your hands on it. But, you know, they were recording all the games for data analysis purposes and Opta stats and all that sort of thing. So the fact that they had all that infrastructure there, it kind of then led to, oh, well, actually, we could have a TMO for games that aren't televised, because they're being recorded anyway for these stats and stuff. And then, well, because we're doing that, it doesn't take a lot more to then broadcast it, so we can create this app and people can pay for it and they can watch it, because the technology has improved in that regard.
And now
we're at a point where, well, actually, it's only another couple of cameras and only one more co-commentator or something. And to be fair, there's a much bigger pool of commentators, I think, now. I mean, I looked at, I think, was it Ruck or something, had a top 10 of rugby commentators, and it was absolute rubbish because Austin Healey and Ben Kay weren't even in the top 10. But there's an awful lot of decent rugby commentators, so you can spread them out. If there's 5 games over the course of a weekend, you're not going to have many of them having to do double, triple shifts to be able to actually fulfill, you know, having decent quality commentary for the games, and obviously, you know, camera work and editing and all the other bits and pieces that go on behind the scenes. So I think there's enough people to make it happen. And rather, I mean, I don't know, would I rather have 4 Premiership games televised and 1 Championship game that's like the pick of the Championship games? And I think My issue is I'd rather have five Premiership games because that means Gloucester is guaranteed on my telly, or, you know, I either go to King's Home or it's on the telly, guaranteed every week. And I don't go to the away games like I used to. So that, selfishly, I probably vote for that option. But then at the same time, if the Championship is on as well, I quite happily do it. And that, to be fair, it kind of brings me on a little bit. It's a question I was going to ask of you guys. Do you think, with there being all five games televised every weekend next season, are we going to see a more consistent kickoff time at King's Home? Is it going to be a regular Friday nighter? Is it going to be a regular late Saturday? Is it going to be, you know, or is it going to be just as random as it has been this season with quite a lot of Friday nights, a few Saturday afternoons, and the Sunday fixture like we've got against Exeter next week?
So I think I remember, Jim, a couple of years ago when I think Lance Bradley was CEO, and they were talking about, it might have been Stephen Vaughan, the club dislike the Sunday afternoon kickoff the most. That's the one they don't want. They find it the most, it's the one that affects sales the most, for walk-up sales, I should say. I would imagine if the club were going to err towards a particular kickoff time, I know it is not, certainly not the best for a lot of fans, but I think the Friday evening game probably would end up being the more regular fixture, because it just, it looks great on telly and there's an atmosphere and a bite to it and all this sort of stuff. Personally, I know for Russ, it's an easier one to do on a Friday night. Whereas personally, Saturday 3 o'clock would be my ideal kickoff time, but I think you're right. They probably will end up being sort of more
if every team is on every week, then, you know, every team can have their, if Sale want to play every Friday night, and if Newcastle want to play every Sunday, and Leicester want to play at 3 o'clock every Saturday, and, you know, then they should be able to do that. Everyone can have.
Well, there's five games a weekend, and you think, okay, well, let's just do it logically. So Bath have to kick off at 2:15 because their floodlights are shit. So that's the first one. So they always kick off a little bit earlier on a Saturday. Gloucester probably would do a 7:45, 8 o'clock kickoff on a Friday night. Newcastle like a Friday night. And you probably would want Friday night over a Sunday, because Sunday, again, it's not ideal. Quinn's probably 3. Leicester probably, let's be honest, most clubs will want a 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff, really, because of the way that
could they do a 5 o'clock or a 5:30? Well,
it'd be interesting to see. If they move the time. So you might have a 2 o'clock kickoff and a 5 o'clock kickoff or something like that, or 2:30, 4 or something like that, similar to what you get in the football, where you get like an early afternoon kickoff at 1:30-ish, and then a late afternoon kickoff, evening kickoff.
You could have one on the Friday, 3 on the Saturday, 1 on the Sunday. Or do you have, you know, like they have done previously, like last weekend, you could have 2 games on Friday night and you just choose which one you want to watch, or 2 3 o'clock Saturdays and you choose which one you want to watch.
I mean, you'd hope with how many channels they've got that is what the option would be. I think it's difficult because it'll show where the balance of power is, won't it? Because the TV company's paying the money. But you would hope that the clubs get a chance to dictate and have some say in this. And if we're going to talk player welfare in the future, that's got to have an impact, hasn't it? Because you can't always have short turnarounds for some teams all the time. So you've got to balance up who plays on. If they play on the Friday, you can't have them play.
Agreed.
Yeah, Sunday the week before and stuff. No. It needs to be more complicated than the TV channel would like it to be. A Gloucester game every Friday night because they bring in the ratings under the floodlights, for example. Yeah.
One thing I would say, and obviously one of the things that happened after Sky took over football, one of the first things that happened was you had Sunday football. but you know, the big game at 4:30, 4 o'clock on a Sunday, right? Now, so you, if you're looking at it from a TV point of view, you don't want to be going up against Sky TV in a Premier League game on a Sunday. That's always the big game. That weekend will be the big game. So what you want to try and do is carve out a niche that is, this is what happens on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. So there's no live football in the UK unless you've got a chipped thing at Saturday on a 3 o'clock. So that should be, in theory, an absolute open goal to excuse the mixed metaphors. But it should be an obvious thing place. That should be every week, the big game. You know, you can create narratives around the around that game, whether it's Leicester, Northampton, Gloucester, Bath, Gloucester, Bristol, Bath, Leicester. You know, all these different sort of things you can create a narrative around.
Yeah.
And that should be the big game. You build up to it all week. You have a couple, you know, an hour before the kickoff is when the game starts. It goes all the way through to the hour after the kickoff, after the final whistle, and you can wrap up some of the other games within all of that. You know, that's kind of where you need to be looking at packaging it, on the basis that you are going to see a drop off in the number of supporters going to the ground. Just you are, because it's cheaper to get a TNT subscription than it is to buy a season ticket at one of these rugby clubs. And that's the down. That's the only, obviously, say Russ, it's the other side of the coin. You know, you're going to have to bear that in mind. That's good. Good like that. That's good. Good little debate about that. I enjoyed that. Right. We're going to pause and come back, and we'll just talk about a few other couple of little bits and pieces that are affecting the game, and finish up.
This is Jamal Ford Robinson, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
How's that?
Right. A couple of other little bits and pieces just to refer to. The Women's Six Nations, Jim, we'll start again with yourself. It was always going to come down to England, France, but England absolutely demolished Ireland, not unexpectedly, at Twickenham on Saturday.
I mean, I think it's fair to say the past couple of weeks, both Wales and Ireland have really disappointed. They
Wales in particular.
I was expecting a hell of a lot more from Wales. Obviously, a huge amount of Gloucester Hartbury players in that squad as well, who are, you know, not used to losing.
No.
So that would be interesting to see how they come back into the Gloucester Hartbury sort of squad and kind of get back to winning ways, hopefully. But yeah, I think there's been a lot of chat. You know, Ellie Kildon got her third player of the match in a row and all this. Yep. And I'm thinking, yeah, she looked fantastic. She was kind of running through gaps and scoring tries, but then so was the whole team were doing that. I mean, Zoe Oldcroft
at the end. I mean, incredible.
Yeah, looked fantastic. Jess Breach was running on one wing. You had Abby Day running on the other wing. I honestly think, and this is what kind of grates me a little bit, because I don't think I've seen Emma Singh play for England yet. They're moaning about the goal kicking percentage, although Aitchison was a lot better this weekend. So they're moaning about the goal kicking being like really bad percentage, and we've got probably the best goal kicker in England sat on the bench, or not even on the bench. And I keep thinking, and I am biased, I know, because she's a Gloucester player, but like Emma Singh could have scored all those tries or done all those same things that Ellie Kildon did. It wasn't the fact that Ellie Kildon's so fantastic, as good as she is. I think there are probably another dozen players that could have done the same thing, given the same opportunity that an incredible England squad have managed to give her. Maybe I'm doing her a bit of a disservice there, but I just think that Tatiana kind of mentioned it, that as a squad, they are still improving, which is scary for anyone to play them. But it is clicking. It is working well. They are a really, really good balance, and they're just on the right wavelength with each other. Offloads, chips, all these little things that don't come off by chance. They come off because of hard work on the training ground and all that. And I just think at the moment, obviously France had a very good strong win. Was it 40-44-0 against
44-0? Yeah, 40-0. Yeah.
Against the Welsh, and you know 88-10 against England against Ireland, absolute thumping. It will be the game of the championship. Obviously, it will be the one. It will be the decider. But I can't see anything other than a bonus point win for England. You know, plus 20-25, because they've just got so much power, so much speed.
It's probably going to come. If the only way I think it could go wrong, and it has occasionally gone wrong,
is another red card.
It's discipline, isn't it, Russ? I mean, just on we've kind of commented on this before, even on this series of the pod, about the fact that there isn't the level of competition there probably should be in the women's game. There's not a lot England can do about that. England have just got to continue doing what they're doing. It's just the worry is as and when they come up against a good side in the World Cup, say New Zealand again. You just have that concern that it might come back to bite them. They're not getting tested enough, but it's not the RFU's job to get everyone else to invest in women's rugby.
No, I mean, what can you do? And it's almost more wider than the women's game, isn't it? You see it in the men's game and how you get buy-in and development in other areas. The biggest answer is money, and the RFU don't have. I'm trying to say that sounds a bit tongue-in-cheek. The RFU are not there to finance. I'm not saying they haven't got the money, but they're not there to finance and bring on the other nations, are they? So yeah, all they can do is develop their game. And what you have to hope is someone then invests in another area, another team, and helps them develop, you know, competition, hopefully. So it brings some envy about. The risk, I guess, is, you know, anytime anyone plays England, it's a cup final for the other team. So yeah, you let your guard down and just have a bad day at the office. That's the real risk. Or like you said, a silly red card, something like that.
From the development of the game, though, more generally, the Women's World Cup is in England next year, 2025. Frustratingly, there isn't anything going to be at Gloucester. It's going to be at Bristol, and to be fair to them, they've spread the games around. There's games
they've spread it out, and actually, Gloucester probably isn't. I mean, Gloucester would be big enough.
It's bigger than Exeter and all the rest of it. But it's I also think maybe the pitch is probably an aspect of it, because it's an artificial pitch, that may have a bearing.
From the looks of the ground, it's geographical. And as Stephen Jones, our good friend, quite rightly said, Bristol, he said this in a tweet after Berlin, Gloucester, Bristol is the biggest rugby city in England. So why would you not have a game there?
I mean, I'm not actually, to be fair to him, Russ. I think you referenced that there then. I was thinking, well, yeah, it is kind of famously known for having lots and lots of rugby clubs. I think Gloucester has had at one point more clubs per capita.
Well, it's funny, because as someone who lives in Bristol, I didn't hear much about the rugby team for a while until they started beating Gloucester. So, you know,
that's because they were all playing for those other rugby clubs that are in Bristol.
Wow.
Yeah, didn't really care about the Shoguns because they were rubbish.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, I get, you know, back to the serious point. I get what they're trying to do. You grow, like we say about what can they do to grow a game, is you've got other areas. This has always been our counter to Mr. Franchise over there, with like the trouble is most of the rugby in England is in Gloucester. Most of the rugby is based in the southwest, so that's a hotbed, so you've got to grow the game elsewhere to make it work. Same for the women's game, you've got to grow that interest, and it would be really good to see good attendances at places like the northeast and so on. So I kind of do understand it. I can also understand why people, when Gloucester have a really successful women's team, achieve good crowds at it. I can understand why it's put a lot of people's noses out as well.
I don't have a problem that Gloucester aren't hosting. I think, you know, at the end of the day, Ashton Gate's the biggest ground in the southwest. You've got to go where you can think you can fill it. I'd imagine they'll be, I don't think they've drawn the pools yet, but the assumption would be that England would probably play at Ashton Gate. And that's probably one of the reasons they've chosen it as a
And it'll probably sell out.
Maybe not
every game, but certainly the ones that count. You know, as you were saying, Ed, you know, it's tough for England to find decent teams to play to really test them. And obviously the French are going to be a bit more of a test. Mm. Watching the under-18s Six Nations, there are some incredibly talented French centres.
Didn't they nil England?
They not quite nil them, no. They beat them, though. And
I think they nilled them, mate, to be honest. I'm pretty sure they did.
I think they did.
I
just remember them being... There was one centre who looked a foot taller than everyone else on the pitch. And I just thought, my God, like, Gloucester, sign her up. She's probably already signed to Toulouse or something. But she just looked incredibly athletic, like so, so strong. And, you know, and I think that's the thing. It's a young woman's game now, much like it's become a young man's game. You know, you don't get that, like, Atkinson was, you know, very, very rare, wasn't he, breaking into England late in his career. You know, you're hitting your peak form in the men's game at about 24. And I think in the women's game, you're probably hitting peak form at about 22. So it's that turnover is getting those quality under 18s into their quality under 20s, get them into the international setup. And we're looking at, you know, Wales and Ireland not being that great. Scotland are doing much better.
Yeah, improving.
It could simply be 1 year and a couple of those under 18s are suddenly thrown into the mix. A couple of those under 20s are thrown into the mix and suddenly you've got some absolute superstars. So any team can go from being average to being fantastic, I think. Mm. But what I was going to get into is New Zealand, the current world champions, who do they get to play?
Yeah, they get to play Australia, South Africa, non-existent Argentina side. And
so they are playing no one. I mean, if you're a female rugby player in Australia, you either play touch rugby or you play rugby league.
Or sevens.
Yeah, because there is just so little women's rugby union out there. To be fair, the women's rugby league is an incredibly high standard. The women's NRL is incredibly good. But it's tough for the New Zealand women because, I think they just about got up to speed in that final. Obviously, the red card helped them massively.
Yeah.
And I think it will be exactly the same again. I think it will take them the whole tournament to get to a point where they're actually kind of match sharp against the top sides. But of course they might not get there. Because...
I was going to say they might come up against one of those sides earlier in the tournament. Yeah. I think it's going to be, it's a great opportunity, as you said before, for women's rugby, because one, you know, England, that you'll get an audience for it. You'll get crowds for it. You would expect England to be knocking around the final and hopefully winning it.
I think it will be all over TikTok. It will be all over, you know, all over Instagram, all over YouTube. You know, you only have to look at the Lionesses and all the, you know, all the fanfare, if you like, around, you know, their Euro success and their World Cup almost success. It's boosted women's football hugely.
Oh, huge. Yeah, massively.
But it's also, I think, boosted women's sport hugely, which is clearly going to have a bit of a knock on to rugby. If the women can do the same at home, you know, like you say, correct time of day for people to be watching, I think it'll be much like 2003 saw a bit of an influx into people playing rugby, especially in those areas where maybe rugby union wasn't quite so prevalent. I think we could see the same again for girls rugby, more girls playing minis, more girls staying in junior rugby, more girls thinking about playing university or college rugby, which they wouldn't have thought of before. And that's just going to mean, obviously, the standard of the women's game improves even more if you've got more people playing it.
Yeah. Just on that point about women staying or girls staying in the game, you know, so my daughter plays football. She's been playing since the age of six. She's now 12. And what I've noticed is the number of girls who probably even 10 years ago would have maybe played for a couple of years, got to 11 or 12 and dropped away. The number of girls now who are staying in the game and actually picking up the game at 11 and 12, where that never happened. I mean, the girls who played football, 10, 15 years ago had been playing from a young age and kept going. Now girls are joining it later because they see themselves on the telly. You know, they see themselves represented, and it's wonderful. And the Lionesses are a huge asset to women's sport in particular. Interesting. Thank you very much, both. We've got Exeter this weekend. We'll probably wait until we find out what team we've got really out before we get too excited about it. And then it'll be build up to Benetton the following week. Any initial thoughts about this weekend, Jim? Are we positive we're going to put a team out that's going to compete?
I think so. It's a home game. Exeter aren't in the greatest of form.
No, lost again this day.
I think. And yes, it's a shame that it's a 6 day turnaround. Mm. Sunday to Saturday. But I think we're more than capable. It's the end of the season. You can kind of you can struggle on a little bit. It's not like we're playing the final the week after the semi. So I think, yeah, we play our strongest 15. We look to carry some momentum into the semi. And then if we need to have a little bit of a squad rotation after that before the final, then so be it.
Yeah. Russ?
Yeah, I think the same. You wrap the players who have got knocks or aren't ready, you give them a rest. But there are players, like I said before, who probably could do with a bit of game time. And rugby's about momentum. As Jim said, Exeter aren't going great. It's a home game. There's a chance to do something there and build up well for the next game.
Right. All the best, guys. We'll speak next week. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.